For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Russia says the US is trying to provoke North Korea into stepping up its nuclear weapons program. US President Donald Trump has again taken to Twitter on the issue, while the Russian foreign minister is urging all sides to talk to each other. US correspondent Priscilla Huff reports.
If they, the Trump administration, want to find a pretext for destroying North Korea, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told reporters, then let them say it outright and let the supreme American leadership confirm it. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, said that Washington has never sought war against Pyongyang, adding that if war does come, it will be due to the acts of aggression, such as the recent test missile launch, and she promised the North Korean regime would be utterly destroyed. Now, U.S. President Donald Trump is chiming in, using a derogatory term for leader Kim Jong-un and scoffing at efforts at talks. Posting on social media, the Chinese envoy who just returned from North Korea seems to have had no impact on Little Rocket Man. President Trump tried to soften his claims by adding Russia and China have condemned the launch. The Russians have made clear they do not believe sanctions work. The only way forward is negotiation. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
UK Prime Minister Theresa May has reiterated her criticism of US President Donald Trump for retweeting a far-right British group. Speaking in Jordan, she said it was wrong for him to do so, despite the president having taken to Twitter to rebuke her for that stance. A series of MPs have condemned President Trump in the UK House of Commons, many calling for a state visit invitation to be withdrawn. Prime Minister May says the row won't affect the so-called special relationship.
I'm clear that that relationship with the United States should continue. I think it is in the interests both of the United Kingdom and the United States and of the wider world. The fact that we work together does not mean that we're afraid to say when we think the United States have got it wrong and to be very clear with them. And I'm very clear that retweeting from Britain First was the wrong thing to do.
Matt Lauer has issued an apology after more women came forward to accuse the former anchor of the breakfast programme, the NBC News Today show, of sexual misconduct in the workplace. The New York Times reports two women confirmed he asked for sex, while trade publication Variety reported on how he exposed himself to women. Anchor and host Savannah Guthrie read his apology on air.
There are no words to express my sorrow and regret for the pain I have caused others by words and actions. To the people I have hurt, I am truly sorry. As I am writing this, I realize the depth of the damage and disappointment I have left behind at home and at NBC. Some of what is being said about me is untrue or mischaracterized, but there is enough truth in these stories to make me feel embarrassed and ashamed.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. How are you doing? It's the 30th of November 2017. Not easy for me to say. It's approaching 3 minutes past the hour. We are live. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining me.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Welcome. Now, George Webb should join me in around about 30 minutes' time. George Webb, due to be on the program last night, but George got the timing wrong. That's all right. We don't mind that. George will be on. We'll talk Podesta. We'll talk Jeffrey Epstein, his relationship with Bill Clinton, and more besides. We'll also talk about Uranium One, the Clinton dynasty. Lots to talk about with George. Really, really, really good guy. And it's been quite a while since George was on the programme. That's it tonight. Bit of a news roundup before then. As always, you can tweet at Richie Allen Show. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Tell me what you're thinking. And shortly, I will announce the winners of last night's competition. I had three copies of Rowan Somerville's Beat book to give away. I asked you a question. We had about 90 entrants, which is very good. I was delighted. About 75 correct answers. And what I did was I put the email addresses of those who got it right into a spreadsheet. And I asked the future Mrs. Allen to pick a number between 1 and 75 or 76. I can't remember. There were so many right answers. And we picked out three. And I'll tell you who those three are sometime this hour. Or maybe later on in the programme. We'll see how it goes. I enjoy doing that. We're live on davidicke.com. Do keep davidicke.com open on your desktop computer or your laptop, because there is absolutely a treasure trove of vital information there that you don't get, obviously, anywhere else, at least not in mainstream national commercial media anyway. We're live on Fab Radio 2 as well, and TuneIn Radio. All right, all right. Well, you heard in the news, and it's been a day for this story, as yesterday was a day for this story. Very interesting. You heard in the news there with Ollie Barrett in London that the UK Prime Minister Theresa May has said that Donald Trump was wrong to retweet those Britain First tweets. He was wrong, but she stressed the special relationship between Britain and the US was in both our nation's interests and it should continue. She rejected calls to cancel a state visit by the US president. She wouldn't say that. And why should she acquiesce to those cancelling or advocating the cancellation of that event? She was in Jordan. Tell you what was hilarious before we talk about Trump. She was in Jordan and she gave this gushing, flowery speech in front of the Jordanian dignitaries and talked about Britain's shared values with Jordan, one of the human trafficking, honour killings and torture capitals of the world. And there was Theresa May. But I suppose if we're selling weapons to the Saudis to murder Yemeni children, I suppose we do have a lot in common with Jordan. So maybe I'm wrong to say that. She did say about Trump, though, that an invitation for a state visit has been extended and has been accepted, but that a date has yet to be set. But no doubt it'll be sometime in the spring next year. Do you want to hear what Theresa May said then? It's brief, it's brief. Have a listen. Theresa May.
Britain First is a hateful organisation. It seeks to spread division and mistrust among our communities. It stands in fundamental opposition to the values that we share as a nation.
Oh, the shared values. Sorry for interrupting you there, Prime Minister. But when you talk about Britain First being a hateful organisation, and it might well be, HSBC... Now, there's a hateful organisation. British Aerospace, there's a hateful organisation. Raytheon UK, Jesus, what a hateful organisation. Anyway, she went on.
Values of respect, tolerance and, dare I say, just common British decency. But the fact that we work together does not mean that we're afraid to say when we think the United States have got it wrong and to be very clear with them. And I'm very clear that retweeting from Britain First was the wrong thing to do. This is a long-term special relationship that we have. It's an enduring relationship that is there because it is in both our national interests for that relationship to be there. And as Prime Minister, I'm clear that that relationship with the United States should continue. I think it is in the interests both of the United Kingdom and the United States.
And Israel.
States and of the wider world.
No, she didn't say Israel. The countries that bomb and maim together stay together. That's the way it is, really. Theresa May shared values. We've heard it all before. There was a call today by the MP Peter Bone for the President to delete his Twitter account. Can't see that happening. And former Conservative Minister Tim Lawton, now he used to be the Children's Minister. Tim Lawton said, if Twitter was any good, if Twitter was genuine in its commitment to fight hate crime online, it would delete Donald Trump's account. This is brilliant. And somebody I have always had a soft spot for, the Newport MP, Paul Flynn, annoyed me today. I sent him a text. I didn't get a text back. Paul Flynn said, Trump should be charged with inciting racial hatred if he does come to the UK. And Paul Flynn's view was echoed by fellow Labour MP, Naz Shah. Good girl, Naz. Good girl. She's being a good girl these days, Naz, after getting thrown to the Zionist wolves by Labour after her criticism of Israel. She's back in line now, Naz. Good girl. There, there. There, there. Ban him. Arrest him. Delete his account. Bejesus, 'twas a day for the virtue signalers. It was a day for it. I wonder, could we rename the 30th of November Virtue Signaler Day from next year and every year thereafter? Oh, it was unbelievable. There was so much of it on TV and radio today that was like a countdown. It was like one of those all-day countdown television programmes, you know, where they count down the 100 best films of all time. It was like a countdown to see who's the number one virtue signaller. So in the great tradition of Top of the Pops, we're going to count down the top three virtue signallers of the day. You ready for this? No rehearsal here. Are we going to do it? We are going to do it. Yes, the top three virtue signalers of the day. We won't do the top 40, but we'll do the top three. You ready for this? You ready? Here we go. Marvellous. The final three in the virtue signalling top 40 charts. Moving up four places from number seven at three. It's Emily Thornberry.
And frankly, this state visit is a real worry. It puts Her Majesty into an incredibly difficult position. We don't want the Queen to be involved in politics in this way. I mean, this is just not the way it ought to be. You know, we really ought to have a little bit more dignity, and we ought to be holding him at arm's length, but she's not done that. So now what does she do? As I say, she's put the Queen into an incredibly invidious position. The moment, the timetable is he's supposed to be coming next year, when next year is supposed to be such a great year for the royal family, a happy year, and in the middle of it, Donald Trump's arriving. And be of no mistake, retweeting things from Britain First is, I cannot think of anything worse. I've just come from the chamber of the House of Commons, where we have a coat of arms of Joe's. And Joe, her murderer, immediately before he killed her, shouted Britain First. He was a supporter of this appalling organisation. Mm. And now the President of the United States has given them oxygen, which is what they want.
Fantastic virtue signalling by Emily Thornberry, coming in at number three this week. Last week's number four has moved up to number two. It's Orange on a Toothpick herself. It's Yvette Cooper.
Well, unfortunately, the President of the United States has not let the matter rest, and I think it was shocking, really, that overnight he chose to challenge publicly the British Prime Minister for effectively defending our communities, and instead to stand by this far-right extremist organisation that spreads poison through communities, and also somebody who has been convicted for hate crimes in the United Kingdom as well. So I think that the government has to ask President Trump to take those tweets down. We should be in no illusion about the damage that this kind of online poison can cause.
Poison.
We know that we've been advised by the police that it is online poison, online extremism, that then fuels the rise of hate crime.
Fantastic week for Yvette Cooper. The use of the word poison there, significant, up to number two, virtue signalling to the moon. She loves the poison. The poison that's damaging us all. She's going places, Yvette Cooper, Orange on a Toothpick. But spending his 22nd week at number one, he's immovable, he's irrepressible, he's a hysterical little bollocks. Again, we say the number one most virtue signalling progressive in the top 40 is none other than Owen Jones.
Last year, a Labour MP, Joe Cox, was murdered by a neo-Nazi terrorist wielding a gun and a knife who yelled Britain First. This year, an Islamophobic terrorist ploughed his car into a mosque, the worshippers outside. The President of the United States has used his platform to promote far-right neo-Nazis in Britain. It is an extraordinary
It's
not something which can be idly dismissed as a bit of stupidity on Twitter. He has used his platform, the most powerful man on earth, to promote the British neo-Nazi movement. You saw today that MPs across the board, not just people on the Labour Party, members of Theresa May's own party, expressing their disgust at a man that many of them described as a fascist.
He's still going.
If you think for one moment it will be acceptable to people in this country that this man can come to Britain, have the red carpet rolled out in an extraordinary honour and privilege, which is what a state visit is, without millions of people showing their anger and dismay, then Theresa May is in for a very, very nasty shock.
Owen Jones, number one for the 22nd week in a row. There's no stopping him. Owen Jones. Top of the Pops, virtue signalling like a mother. I'm not going to say it. All right. Shall we leave that alone, shall we? We'll leave that alone. Marvellous. Muppets, every one of them. Unbelievable. Not a single challenge from a presenter across UK media today. I mean, my God. Ban the man because he retweeted something that somebody else put on Twitter. It's marvellous. There's more to this than meets the eye. We'll get into it in a minute. Anyway. Right. My money is on Owen Jones still being there next week. We might do that every week. We might have a top three virtue signalling rundown. Chart rundown or something like that every week. All in good fun. There is a very serious side to it though. Let's stay with Owen Jones for a minute. And if you're listening in overseas, you have no idea who Owen Jones is. Good. I'm not going to tell you. You can Google him. He threatens Theresa May with millions of protesters if he doesn't get his way and if Trump isn't banned. Somebody needs to change his nappy. I mean, this is adult baby stuff beyond belief. Listen to Trump, to Jones even, speaking with Kay Burley today, effectively threatening to get a million people on the streets if he doesn't get his own way.
If Theresa May makes the grave mistake of continuing to offer a huge honour to the President of the United States, who has propagated neo-Nazi material, British neo-Nazi material, then a huge number of people, decent people, will take to the streets rejecting racism and Islamophobia and bigotry that he represents. And that is what Theresa May, she will face a whirlwind of protest. Okay. And she should know that she has a very, very weak, fragile, feeble government. Does she really want the prospect of some of the biggest, angriest demonstrations in British history under her watch?
She must be shitting herself. Right. Jones fancies himself like nobody else I've ever seen. The idea that he could get a million people on the streets to protest the arrival of the President of the United States is kind of liking yourself quite a bit, isn't it? But there's more to that than just laughing at Owen Jones and the ridiculous caricature that Owen Jones is. This is the essence of the progressive. If I don't like what it is you are saying, I shouldn't have to hear it. I'm not prepared to just not listen. I demand that it is not heard anywhere. Ever. And I will throw every tie I have out of my oversized pram. I will soil every nappy that I have and scream like a hyena until I get my way. Right? It's mad. It's mad. Of course, don't think for a minute that I'm saying protesting is wrong. Of course it's not. It's everybody's right to protest whatever they want, whether it be bad laws, illegal laws, attacks on the livelihoods of people, you know, downsizing, privatising the NHS, whatever it is you want to you have absolutely every right to get out there and to protest. But, of course, what Jones wants is a million strong march, because people must be protected from that which he doesn't like or he doesn't agree with. This is it, you see. This is the essence of it, right? And there's little or no opposition to this in UK mainstream media today. None. Trump can't be left in. It's abhorrent. He's racist. I called Jones a prole pretender on Twitter recently, meaning that he's a fake working class representative, proletariat pretender. He didn't like it, so he blocked me. He wouldn't engage with me. He's been on television all week, every week. When I hear Jones, I'm reminded of King Arthur in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You might remember that film when King Arthur, on this horse that's not a horse, he's just kind of bobbing along. And he's not really on a horse. And he meets the autonomous collective, this man and woman who are collecting filth. And Arthur says, "I'm your king." And they say, you know, nobody voted you as king. And they start giving him a lecture in political class, in class-based politics, effectively. And the guy won't shut up about class and about his anarcho-syndicalist commune. And Arthur keeps telling him to shut up. You know, shut up, you'll remember it. And whenever I hear Jones on television or on radio, I think of that clip from Arthur, where he's telling the guy to shut up. Not that I think Jones should be shut up.
If Theresa May makes the grave mistake of continuing to offer a huge honour to the President of the United States, who has propagated neo-Nazi...
Yeah. It's all very childish, isn't it? So, we'll move on from Owen Jones for a minute, and we'll go back to Yvette Cooper, because this is where it really gets serious. This is where they extract what it is they want. The establishment is taking the Trump Twitter furore and Britain First and all of that, and now they're using it for that which they've wanted all along, censorship. Yvette Cooper tells Sky News that online, the internet is the new battleground against extremism. Have a listen to Yvette Cooper.
Well, that I think is my worry, and that I think is everybody's worry, because what you say online matters. Online is where the new battle for democracy really is. The Prime Minister has rightly challenged Putin's Russia for spreading fake news in order to spread discord, but that means you also have to be very strong against anything that the President of the United States does that equally is spreading online extremism. And it is that kind of online battle that is immensely important.
Hmm? We're not really comparing President Trump to President Putin, are we?
No, what I'm saying is wherever you get any kind of online extremism, you have to challenge it, or wherever you get any online spreading of fake news, you have to challenge it.
Right. And this is what it's about. Now, Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary, she went a step further, and in Parliament today, she said, or reminded, because this isn't news, but she took the opportunity to remind people that artificial intelligence will be automatically taking down so-called extremist content. Amber Rudd.
The UK has been leading in this area. The Prime Minister has called for more action. We called, in the wake of the terrorist attacks this year, for a global internet forum for counter-terrorism, which I went myself to San Francisco at the launch of in the summer. The internet companies are taking action. Twitter now takes down 95% of the illegal material through using artificial intelligence. The fact that they are now engaging in machine learning to get this hate taken down is an incredibly important investment and breakthrough to ensure that more is taken down. But we're not complacent. There's more that needs to be done, and we'll always make sure that we provide the vital leadership to ensure that it does take place.
There's always a payoff for the establishment. Yes, it's great reality television for the masses, all this soap opera, but it's also an excuse for censorship. And they're not after Britain First. I was asked today by somebody who took offence to, again, this, you know, this idea of taking offence, because I wasn't harder on the things that are said by those connected with Britain First. I've had a lot to say over the years about right-wing groups, and I think they're made up of, these groups are made up by, they're made up of, I think, a group of confused people. Some of them are not bad people at all. They're confused. They don't know what's happening in their communities. Some of the people associated with Britain's First and with the English Defence League are very sinister. They are violent. They are violent. We've seen this over the years. They're nasty, nasty bastards. We know this. Football hooligans. Tommy Robinson. Some of the people listening to this programme are rather enamoured of Tommy Robinson. Now, I wouldn't silence Tommy Robinson. I wouldn't say that he should be deplatformed or that, you know, he should be prevented from speaking. Not at all. Not at all. Ever. Ever would I say that anybody should be prevented saying what it is they have to say. But Robinson is a football hooligan. A very violent man, domestic violence, the whole shebang. They're not after Britain's First and the English Defence League, and which I think they might have prescribed. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. No, they didn't. They don't care about them because the system needs the far right. It needs Antifa. It needs the progressives to metaphorically kill one another. This is about the researchers who are exposing what's really going on. That's what all this is about. And they'll use these examples to get their artificial intelligence programs. Again, David's recent book, Phantom Self, and his brand new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, dealing with this and where this is going. Horrifying when you think about it. that they're going to employ artificial intelligence, which will acquire itself sentience. We will have sentient artificial beings capable of thinking for themselves. There's no doubt about that. This is only the beginning. It's scouring the media to take things down. Now, it's happening already. It's happening with our YouTube channel here at this programme, David's YouTube channel, many other people we know. The numbers of people subscribing to our YouTube channel go up and up and up and up and up and up. But those views that we get are levelling off, and in some cases they're declining, because these programmes are preventing people from seeing. We published a video today. We published a video today. We published a video yesterday. This is what's happening, you see. All right, so it's not about Britain Force or the EDL, but this will be the excuse. Now, finally, for the moment, there was a very interesting exchange on Good Morning Britain today. Anne Coulter is a right-wing commentator and was being interviewed by Ben Shepherd and I think a woman called Kate Garraway. I don't think you hear Kate Garraway in this clip, but she was there as well. Now, Shepherd said to Coulter, no, first of all, Coulter, the right-wing commentator, Fox News, you see her on Fox News quite a bit, Coulter said that all Trump is really doing is watching a river of sorts. Twitter is like a river, Coulter said. You know, it's a very good analogy, actually. If you open your Twitter account and you press home and you don't press notifications, you press home and you start to see an avalanche of tweets from people you have followed. It's an avalanche. It's just all coming down the page very, very quickly, all these tweets. So it's a good analogy. She said it's like a river, and that what Trump is doing is taking stuff out of the river and saying, oh, that's interesting, and retweeting it. Now, that's what Coulter said. I'm not saying that's true. So she said this, and we'll pick it up from there.
Anne, sorry, if I could just interrupt, because you're saying it's just like watching things go by and then retweeting them and putting them out there. But also putting them out there often can be seen as condoning what you're looking at, whether you're saying, look at this, because you're then putting it out to more of your followers. And the video that you retweeted yourself, the video that you retweeted yourself, which was supposed to be of a Muslim migrant beating up somebody on crutches, was actually nothing of the sort. It was a Dutch national who was born and bred in the Netherlands. He wasn't a Muslim migrant at all.
No, he was the child of a Muslim migrant. And look, these are videos. It's not like I'm swearing to the veracity of these people, though I'm not as, you know, horrified by someone who's anti-abortion.
You should be, though,
Anne,
in your position, position of influence with all these people that listen to you. Don't you think that you actually have a duty to make sure you can swear to the veracity of these people?
Well, what I was going to say is, look, if this were 1941 and someone produced a video of, from Germany, of Jewish men with their bones sticking out, I wouldn't really care if one of them, oh, that's not really actually a Jew in a concentration camp. That's an Argentinian in something else. I mean, we're in the middle of a worldwide jihad. These are important videos of the ones that Trump tweeted. Yeah, they were all Muslims. And the big claim is, oh, but this one was born in the Netherlands. He's as Dutch as Van Gogh. No, come on. This is what the issue is. This is, Britain has become all of Western Europe, a cautionary tale, I think, for the United States. If you're just going to keep dumping these people from very different cultures, some of whom are part of this worldwide jihad, you're going to have big problems. And that's what was being pointed out in the videos.
You see, this is what David describes as my dot is the only dot. Coulter is okay. She's not the horrible hag that I thought she was years ago. I think she believes what she says. I think she's reasonably intelligent. But it's my dot's the only dot. Dumping people into other cultures. Well, it's not quite as straightforward as that. Yes, that's the agenda. But whose agenda? The millions of people coming into Europe. It's not their agenda. Their agenda, presumably, in Syria, in Libya, in Lebanon, in Yemen and elsewhere, was to get on with their lives, raising their children. In their faith, presumably. That was their agenda. This agenda is real. But the likes of Coulter and Britain Force and others, this is why they're so beloved by the system. They're not going to talk about the fact that Hillary Clinton, as US Secretary of State oversaw the razing to the ground of Libya and the creation of chaos that led to people leaving that country. The destruction of Syria. I'm not going to go over all this again because this is basic stuff. This is entry-level stuff for people who listen to this programme. But this is the point, you see, that never gets made. David was telling me there was a very interesting article by Peter O'Born, who's a good journalist and a decent guy and speaks his mind. I haven't seen the article, but it's about Syria and it's about Yemen and Saudi Arabia. And David says that, you know, again, guys like Peter, with the best will in the world, up to a point, get it, but they don't see the bigger picture and they miss the point as to what's happening and who's behind it. So we never get around to talking about what's happening and who's really behind it. It never happens. So I would have said to Ann Coulter if I was Ben Shepherd. I don't know anything about Ben Shepherd, but he's not a political interviewer. He's an entertainment presenter. You could probably write on the back of a stamp what he knows about geopolitics. I would have said, Anne, the guy appearing to punch the guy in the video in the Netherlands, you can't bring race into that because that could be about anything. Unless we find out that the guy who punched the white guy, the dark-skinned guy who punched the white guy, unless we find out for a fact that it was racially aggravated, well, we can speak about that then, but it could have been about anything. It could have been about a parking dispute. It could have been about somebody sleeping with somebody's wife. It could have been about anything. You know, we live around Sikhs, Muslims, Jews, Christians, the vast majority of them, great people. Couldn't be surrounded by better people. But there is a hidden agenda that most people don't know, don't understand, don't even want to look at. To destroy the national sovereignty of Western democracies by first of all destroying countries in the Middle East, the blood sacrifices, out come millions of God-fearing ordinary folk who don't know what the hell is going on, embattled, embittered, coming into countries that can't deal with that level of people coming in terms of the pressure on public services, so you have problems straight away. But among the number of people coming in are obviously people who subscribe to the Wahhabi Salafist ideology, that lunatic ideology. And from that you get problems. From that you get some of the things that happened in Rotherham, in Rochdale. These are serious issues. So Coulter should say, look, we're being prevented from talking about these issues by virtue signalers who every time somebody says, look, there are some young men, there are some young men, and they've got some very bad ideas, and they're being allowed to behave how they want, and nobody's challenging them because of the fear of being called Islamophobic. We can't allow that. But of course, Coulter doesn't. She talks about global jihad and all this sort of stuff. Again, my dot's the only dot, black and white, as David would say, no shades of grey. Yes, there is an attack on sovereignty. It seems that everybody is a victim of discrimination. Everybody is, except white Christian men and women. I would agree with that, and I am as far from Christianity as you could possibly be. No interest in it whatsoever. But there's evidence to support that. Frank Ferrady on this programme, University of Kent, David Icke, others. There's evidence to support it. Right? Minority cultures being favoured legally, financially favoured over the indigenous majority culture, and this leads to chaos, and the chaos was planned all along. Right, it's 26 and a half minutes to the top of the hour, enough of that. Going to take a break. When we come back, George Webb should be with me live from DC. Don't miss George, back in a minute.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
is your mind, full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper.
Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings
may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 24 minutes to the top of the hour, 23 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. You're with the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, UK, TuneIn Radio as well. Let's get straight into it. Our first guest, our only guest today, is no stranger to you. We first came across him when we talked about his excellent series on YouTube entitled Where is Eric Braverman? He's been on the programme talking about the Podesta emails, DynCorp, Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, the reality behind the Clinton Foundation. This guy's a terrific investigative journalist. He really, really is. And I got in touch with him again this week because we're very interested in the threat. I suppose you can only describe it as a threat by a former Secret Service agent called Dan Bongino, who threatened to reveal new details about Bill Clinton's trips aboard the private plane of Jeffrey Epstein, a plane which has been nicknamed the Lolita Express. Epstein, of course, is a friend of Prince Andrew, a friend of Richard Branson, a billionaire convicted paedophile. We'll also talk about Uranium One as well. News breaking on that. It's great to welcome back to the programme our friend George Webb. George, welcome back.
Hey, Richie, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing is the question. You're outdoors by the sounds of it. You're a busy man today.
Well, I'm going to get to a quieter place, I promise you.
Well, take your time. There's no panic. We're live, but I can fill. I'm a good filler, George. I can fill to my heart's content.
It's all good.
It's good to catch up with you.
Yeah, you know, there's so much happening on Capitol Hill, and you see me in my series, my video series, George Webb, you know, running all around Capitol Hill, left and right and center, covering these stories. But there's a lot of stuff breaking every day in these stories. There's more than you can count, actually.
Can we start with Bill Clinton then? Because We've been following this on Russia Today here in the UK. It's also been covered by davidicke.com, one or two other independent media outlets. It seems, George, that there's enough for a prosecutor to recommend that Bill Clinton be invited to come and have a conversation with either the FBI or local law enforcement agents over his presence on the Lolita flights at least 26 times. This is massive, George. What do we know today about this? What's happening?
Well, I was just in Devin Nunes' office. He's House Intel. He is looking at filing a contempt charge against the FBI for not giving up information that they're trying to get regarding this Fusion GPS dossier that they've got. Then there's the Podesta group that's working with them to create these kind of dirt files on people. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there's secret hearings over at Senator Burr in the House, in the Senate side, the Senate intel side. And they're looking into the same sort of thing, which is they're looking into the Mueller investigation and so forth. I was at the courthouse today. And they're looking at maybe indicting Flynn, or there's rumors that they might indict Flynn. So there's lots going on Capitol Hill today.
It's I suppose it's fluid, George. Yeah, it's moving and moving and moving. And of course, it's only in the early afternoon there, as far as you guys go. George, what do we know about Secret Service agent Dan Bongino? And why did Bongino get into a Twitter spat with a former associate of Hillary Clinton? In terms of, that's why he threatened to release this information. Why didn't Bongino go to the authorities before to say, look, I've got some, you know, explosive information on Bill Clinton? Why didn't he do that before?
Well, I think there's a code, you know, like the police have a blue code here. And I think the Secret Service is sort of like a federal police force. Sometimes they act like a secret police sometimes, kind of in concert with the FBI. But that's just when there's a few bad actors that are running the show. I think what people are trying to do is put the Clintons to bed. There's just been so much, 30 years of the Clintons here, and everyone's just trying to kind of say, go away.
Right.
And Bongino, I don't think, wanted to say anything, but it just, if they keep these strong arm tactics, and they really use these strong arm tactics for 30 years, and everybody's just tired of it. Washington's exhausted from it, and they just want to, the Democratic Party wants to move on, as well as the Republican Party. Just start over.
But you know what, George? That will depress so many victims of these people, because they will say, all right, we understand people are tired of the Clintons and they want the Clintons to just piss off and go retire on a ranch somewhere. But the fact is, George, you've uncovered through your own meticulous investigations, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, I'm telling the truth, you know, your own research, the research of other people, these are arch criminals, George. They deserve to be behind bars. And people will say it's not good enough that people just want to get rid of the Clintons and just be done with them. They need to be put in prison. But it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, they have a $200 million retreat in the Maldives. And the Maldives, they don't have an extradition treaty. They also have an arrangement with the king of Morocco. We don't have an extradition treaty there. Jeff Epstein has his plane. They can pretty much leave anytime they want. They can get to Canada. They've got safe refuge in Canada with NATO up there. So there's the idea that they're actually going to serve time, I think, is a long shot. And I know how the victims feel. I know how the people in Haiti feel, and the people in Africa, and the people in Eastern Europe and so forth. Well, all over in the United States with the farmers out west, you know, with the uranium.
Yeah,
but I just don't think it's going to happen, because you can just jump on a plane too easy and be out of the country. And she's too well connected. And she's got a plan too to get out of here too.
I want to. We're going to talk about uranium, the Uranium One scandal, and I know there's a lot of developing, important developing aspects of that. It's really important. It's really good. Should I say this? I've often criticised people for saying things like this on the programme, but I'm going to say it. Clinton has been present on airplanes when underage girls have been on those planes, and those underage girls have been handpicked for Epstein and Epstein's friends by other women. And Clinton was on there 26 times. That looks really, really, really bad, George. You know, there are people making all sorts of, they're making all sorts of claims online about Clinton. Before you answer that, in terms of what you think, you know, is the real story with Clinton, We have listeners to this program, and they're big fans of Donald Trump, sadly. Eventually, yeah, people will wake up to the fact that all these people are all playing for the same team. But there are people who love Trump, and they want to believe that Trump is desperately keen to go after paedophiles of all levels in society. But I don't see any evidence that Trump is trying to do that. You know, do you see any evidence, George, that Trump is taking this on? Go ahead.
No evidence. No evidence at all. What Trump has to worry about, I think, is building a secure command center for his own people. I mean, if you look at the people all around him, they've been picked off one by one. You know, Bannon got picked off. Sebastian Gorka got picked off. Flynn. Adam Carter was never really a part of it. These other guys were just kind of, you know, hangers-on. They were in their campaign a few months. But Flynn was a key guy, and so was Gorka, and so was Bannon. And if you can't keep your own communication to those people, even General Kelly had a leak in his phone. You know, his phone was hacked. So now there's rumor that, you know, when Trump went to Bedminster, New Jersey in for August vacation, that he gutted the White House and they took out all the listening devices and then they moved back in. They have a secure communication area in Virginia they can go to at the Pentagon. Supposedly Mar-a-Lago got retrofitted. If you go over to DHS on K Street, they it looks like a Mattis project. He completely gutted out the first two floors to remove any kind of listening devices. I think that's how you have to build it out. If you don't have your own commanders, you know, your own orders to your own commanders, you don't really have anything. So it may take a little bit, but I am seeing signs that it is turning slowly. I think he's kind of got his command post set up now. But he can only go after the, you know, all these other crimes when his own situation is safe. And he's been under attack for a year. I mean, or almost a year now, just straight out the whole year.
But yet, George, what he's done is he's almost worked from the Zionist playbook, hasn't he? I mean, he's surrounded himself with Goldman Sachs bankers, with people who've, you know, sworn allegiance to Israel. He's a great friend of Israel's. He's kind of a neocon, Zionist neocon's kind of wet dream, really. I mean, these attacks that you... But that's what we see. These attacks are coming from progressive media and progressives. But maybe this is all part of some divide and rule plan, George. To us, it looks like reality television. But planned reality television. You know what I mean? It's actually by design. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I just think that I go back to this trust network. If you can't trust the people that are closest around you, if you can imagine being surrounded every day and the people around you are supposedly your friends are leaking stuff, you know, left, right, and center every day to the press, and you got Andrew McCabe spying on you and bugging you and hiding behind the curtains of the White House and, you know, with like you did with Flynn, it's kind of a bunker mentality. I don't really see any grand plan with Trump. I don't see that there's anybody pulling puppet strings. He really just says what's on his mind and tweets it out. So you always kind of know what he's thinking.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I think, George? You know, sorry to interrupt you. I'll tell you what I think. I think you're onto something. Trump is actually unaware that he's controlled Trump. He doesn't realize that he... Because I believe Trump was chosen. I thought Clinton was the cabal's... woman for president. I was convinced of it. I was convinced that she was the chosen one because of who she is. And I now think we were hoodwinked all along. I think the deep state want him in there because there's no better actor than the actor who doesn't even realise they're acting, who's behaving normally. That's how I see it. I don't know if you agree with that. You probably don't.
I do, actually. I think, you know, they say Trump kind of agrees with the last person who just briefed him.
Right.
If you put five or six people in a room, let's say General Kelly, General Mattis, and General Dunford, who is the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Kelly's the Chief of Staff, and then Secretary of Defense is Mattis. He likes generals. He's going to come out of there. If they say we need to hit, you know, North Korea, and we're going to take these 82 sites out, he'd say, yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, go for it. You know, I mean, that's kind of how he is. he really, I mean, he had that military experience, a military school experience, and he always wanted to be in the military without actually getting shot at. And so he really, you know, he moved that direction. And I think he's heavily influenced by that. And they know that. And so that's how they communicate with him. And I think the deep state's gotten everything they wanted so far, everything. And he's just now with Mattis, just now maybe turning the boat a little bit, but none of the stuff of put locker up or build a wall or, you know, Obamacare, none of that. Now they might get taxes today. The Senate's voting today. And Barrasso, I just saw him over in the Senate. He said he was going to have the bill by tonight. So the Republicans will have something to throw under their Christmas tree this year with tax, I think. But that's where we are so far.
George Webb is on the line. George, I know we said we do a long segment, but I'm not going to keep you too long today. We'll do another 15 minutes if you can.
Yeah.
If you're okay with that. Yeah, I know we said we do an hour, but I know you're busy and you're out and about and all that. And you're a good guy to do it. I, of course, will tweet out where people can find your work, of course, your excellent work. George Webb is on the line. George, you know, it's scandal after scandal. Give our listeners the overview, if you can, the kind of Cliff Notes background to the Uranium One scandal, which the media is not covering. Apart from RT and independent sources and yourself, of course, people are not talking about it. So many of our listeners, they don't really have a grasp of Hillary Clinton, her dealings with Russian oligarchs, uranium, the FBI. Do you want to give us a bit of a background to this, George?
Sure. Imagine you ran a country store and you ordered a whole bunch of stuff and you stored it for a while and then you sold it. That's Uranium One. The store is United States. The first 10 years of it are going to be taking your highly enriched uranium from these nuclear weapons in Russia and bringing them into the United States after what they call downblending them to low enriched uranium. High enriched uranium can be used for weapons. The reason why you downblend it is to make it safe just for nuclear use, right? So it's highly enriched is extremely valuable. It's like, you know, a quarter pounder is $8 million. So Jesus. It's, you know, now you give that to Hillary Clinton and you put it in the hands of a $20 an hour truck driver. That truck driver can either go to Tennessee and store it for future, or they can take it to get down blended. Well, I think she just stored it up until she became Secretary of State and then shipped it out. And mainly to the developing, to Europe, to a company called Uranco. Uranco is in the Netherlands. They're in Germany. But they also have interests in Africa and the Middle East. So it's just like you stocked up resources for the future, and then you sold it later when you became in a position where you could sell it and get money for it. And that happened over kind of a 20-year period of time. Most people just think Uranium One is 2010 when the decision goes through that they can let the resources go. They even have a company called Resources for the Future, which Podesta is on the board of and his wife's on the board of, but they cash out right before the election. So that's really Uranium One. I mean, you can make it more complicated, but it's really the whole story.
That's the basics. How did she get away with that, George? I mean, who was looking, who was in charge in terms of the security side of this uranium? Surely somebody was looking after
this
stuff.
Well, the FBI.
The FBI.
The FBI runs an organization called the NNSC, which is a Nuclear National Security Agency, like our NSA, only for nuclear. And it's FBI agents that run that. McCabe kind of was in charge of that. McCabe, Mueller, Comey, and Rosenstein were in charge of setting up the informants for Uranium One. So it's all the same cast of characters now that are the special prosecutors in Uranium One. So... and the people who pushed it through was Hillary Clinton and all the Podesta cabinet that he put in with Citibank. And one of them's Jack Lew was one of the key guys. And then Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff for Obama, was Jesus. Another key guy. So, you know, you got to ship it. So they needed the ships from the UAE and you need to truck it. So they needed to get a trucking company here called Transport Logistics. I mean, you could get in more into the details, but pure plain and simple, it's just like, hey, I take a bunch of orders, I store it, and then I sell it when I get in a position where I own it.
And was she just again, George, this is basic stuff and I don't want to bore you, but just for our listeners who are new to this, was Clinton putting the security of the United States at risk by doing what she was doing?
I think so. If the highly enriched uranium left the country, or you sent it to a country where you know it had a breeder reactor where they could use plutonium, let's say, see, the problem with the uranium that came from Russia is it had all, it wasn't clean. It had a lot of what they call transuranics, a lot of plutonium, a lot of these other things. So the people that were actually blending it and downblending it in Illinois and Kentucky were getting very high radiation levels and so forth, and maybe coming down with some bad cancers and things. So that's the part about Hillary. She does cut some corners. Now, what I do as a journalist is, you know, you have Judicial Watch, and they will file what they call a freedom of information. And it's kind of like, well, send me the documents when you can. I, as a journalist, also do lawsuits. And I call people on, you know, I've got three different lawsuits, one's against the DNC, a couple of blocks from me here in Capitol Street. I've got a lawsuit against Podesta Group, Fusion GPS, and which really kind of put this whole Uranium One deal together. And I'm also against Uranium One. And then I also have one against the FBI. So I got a lot going here. I got three different lawsuits going now. And the idea is really put them on the stand and discover this information to get these documents out so people can see for themselves, so we don't have to speculate. And we're just going into discovery with the DNC case, and we're same thing with the Podesta Group. The FBI case is a little bit after that.
This uranium scandal, which largely being ignored by the media. I know the likes of Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, but again, it was after people like you started talking about it, George. I suppose, and I don't mean to be flippant, and I certainly don't mean to be funny, with the Clintons over the years, every dirty deal and every corrupt organization they were involved in, there was a trail of bodies. I suppose if you started looking really hard at the people around this uranium and the FBI, I'm sure you'd probably find there were strange and mysterious and unexplained deaths, right?
Yeah, well, I'm still alive.
Yeah,
so that's good proof that it's not hit the too high yet. But yeah, there have been people, especially people about ready to testify. You know, I don't really follow that blood trail as much, so I can't really speak knowledgeably about that. But I know there's this Magnitsky guy who was kind of, you know, the Clintons every once in a while stab the current partners in the back and go with new partners because they're cheaper and want less percentage. And one of these guys was Magnitsky. I think they did kill him in prison, and they named an act after him here in the United States, Magnitsky Act. But that's one of the guys. Paul Manafort's another one of them that I think came really close to being murdered. But he's, thank God, he's still alive. I've seen him, saw him a couple days ago. But he was on the run there for about a year as well.
She revealed herself, didn't she, when she was Secretary of State, when she was captured talking about Libya. We came, we saw, he died. She revealed herself for the psychopath that she is. I mean, we're dealing with psychotic people here.
Yeah. I mean, she's one of those people who will do anything to stay in power and get power. And she just, that she's just a very, like Julian Assange says, she's almost sick with that desire. She really just needs to retire and enjoy her, you know, grandkid, or kids now, I guess. But she won't. She just has this, you know, monomaniacal focus on being president again. And the whole town here is saying, please stop, you know. But everybody's still kind of afraid of Hillary Clinton. So it'll be interesting to see if she keeps pushing this.
Well, what's interesting, George, is you've said that there's a real appetite among people for her to just piss off once and for all, go and retire, piss off. Do you think she might over-egg the pudding, as it were, and that by hanging around, she might eventually hang herself?
Yeah, very, very likely, because Uranium One would be a great example. Everyone had kind of forgotten about that. And by re-attacking Trump, you know, on everything you can imagine, it kind of brought out the right again to say, hey, well, what about this? You know, Mueller indicted Paul Manafort, right? Well, if you look at the indictment, it's 30 or some pages. Only about a page has to do with Trump. And the stuff that it lists are trivial things, like a phone call from an ambassador. Most of the stuff is him working with the Podesta group. Paul Manafort worked with the Podesta group every day. He was over there on G Street every day. And they were getting people visas. They were bringing this oligarch money in through these EB-5 visas. And they were bringing in, you know, that was basically what they were doing and setting up the rat line here in the United States for Uranium One. And, you know, it was just complete backfire. She keeps trying to blame people for what she's done. So the people produce the document and it says, no, you did it.
Yeah.
So she keeps doing this over and over.
This is the woman, of course, who illegally deleted God knows how many emails, you know, incriminating emails. This is a woman whom has proven on the record has, you know, no problems whatsoever with the abuse of children. None. I mean, we see the audio of her giggling about getting a man off who'd raped young girls. Do you think all of this is all connected, George, just in the last couple of minutes that we have you on, in terms of the Podesta emails, Pizzagate, kind of segueing into Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton? Do you think that this is all one big cabal and that arms smuggling, uranium trading, murder, child abuse, this is all just part of what they do, right?
Well, I don't know about the murder and the child abuse, but I do know that the young girl thing, you know, and finding brides, you know, 13, 14-year-old brides for these Arab sheikhs, that's considered okay in some cultures. Our culture considers that, you know, child rape and child enslavement. But I do think that's happened. And I do think there are these oil sheikhs that come to Jeff's Island and get, you know, pick five or six that they take home, like, you know, Christmas presents. I do think that happens. And he's done that in Europe and in Paris and with modeling agencies in Paris as well. And that's just his job, to bring the girls there and show them off. So, and that kind of seals these arms deals. It's kind of all in one. They seal the arms deals and they seal the, you know, other things that are trading with these kind of, you know, parties. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think out in Long Island where Jeff used to be, and then up on the Upper West Side where he used to be, then Florida, Mar-a-Lago, where he kind of got kicked out, West Palm Beach, and then finally that little St. James Island. It kind of like is icing on the cake, the after dinner, you know, cigar for after you've done the deal. I think that's what I believe. I don't have a lot of proof on that other than the three different criminal cases against Jeff Epstein. But there, I mean, just the one in Florida had 50 Jane Does.
50.
You know, 50, yeah.
Do you ever feel like taking a shower three or four times a day, George? I mean, no, seriously, I mean, these are the most disgusting tyrants on planet Earth. Yeah. We have them here. We have Theresa May here, George, talking about shared values. She's in the Middle East at the moment, prostituting herself for the arms manufacturers of this country, selling arms to Jordan, to Bahrain, to Saudi Arabia, murdering children while talking about shared values. I mean, will just before you go, will we ever bring this house of cards down, George? You know,
well, it's going to be documents, and my two lawsuits, one is the DNC a block away from here, which is the source of the documents, the 650,000 emails, and then Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner have accepted service for where the emails are going in New York. That's where they've said all the things you've said, that there's emails to prove it, and I want to produce those 650,000 emails, and then we'll find out. It's like the Podesta group. When we found his emails, we found the DNC, we got a look at a peek into it, kind of the doors cracked open a little bit. And this, hopefully, when we get the 650,000 emails, we'll have a wide open view of what actually happened.
I've said it before, George, and I mean it. There are not too many real journalists operating in the way that you do, ethically, only talking about what you can prove. I think you're great. Please come back soon and talk about those cases that you've basically taken, and those legal pursuits that you've undertaken, I should say, because I really want to hear about those. Our listeners will be told online where to find out more about your work. For those who don't know already, that is. Thanks for doing it, George. Great insight, mate. Great to hear from you again.
All right. Thanks, Richie. You take care.
Look after yourself. George Webb, live on the line from Washington, D.C. This Thursday, the 30th of November 2017. We were going to have him for an hour, but I forgive him. I understand that he's out and about and things are happening pretty fast there and he's not at home as he was due to be. But anyway, we got some interesting stuff out of him there. It's 5 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. I'm going to take some music. When I come back, I will tell you who has won copies of Beat, the terrific book by Rowan Somerville, Lilliput Press. Tell you more about that in a minute after some music. Big fan of this band from Sweden. They're called Shout Out Loud. It's a wonderful band. Very 80s. They're a modern band. They sound very like an 80s band. This is a song called Blue Ice. And it's on the Richie Allen Show for Thursday. Thanks for tuning in. Tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Let me know what you thought of what George had to say or anything else. Back in a couple of minutes with the competition winners.
It hurts when I breathe and it hurts when I speak. You want everything I own, everything you want. I keep running away, running away, running away. You keep surprise next time with this blue eyes. Came out of the blue.
The Shout Out Louds, or Shout Out Louds, I should say. Blue Ice on the Richie Allen Show. Yeah, what is it? 9 minutes past the hour, Thursday's programme. Right, so yesterday, I asked a question. We had even three copies of Rowan Somerville's book entitled Beat, which I've already waxed the lyrical about. It's a great, great read. Very human book. Very, very, very good book. And Rowan sent three to me to give away to you. And I asked the question yesterday. We had about 76 correct answers, about a half a dozen or more that weren't correct. The question was, what is the designated capital of Palestine? The answer is East Jerusalem. The administrative centre of Palestine is Ramallah, but East Jerusalem is the designated capital of Palestine. Now, you will know that Israel claims Jerusalem as its capital, as does Palestine, but the international community recognises neither of their rights. So it's East Jerusalem anyway. So we closed it just before I came on air, put all the names on a spreadsheet, jumbled them around and assigned them numbers, and without having a clue what she was doing, the future Mrs. Allen picked out the number 23, the number 64, and the number 7. And those names are, and I don't have addresses, I wouldn't be giving out the addresses online anyway, but I will email the winners tomorrow, get their addresses, and send on a copy of Beat. The winners are Jenny Hudson. Jenny Hudson is in Australia, so I've got to send that. Might take a few days to get there. Jenny Hudson, congratulations, Jenny. Mary Summers, well done, Mary. And Michelle Finlay is in London. Jenny Hudson is in Australia. I have no idea where Mary Summers is, but Michelle, Mary and Jenny, I'll be posting on to you a copy of Rowan Somerville's book, Beat, which is a wonderful, wonderful book. Big shout out to Rowan and to Lilliput Press for doing that. Do get a copy of the book. If you are looking for a book to buy this week or next week and you're running out of something to read, I recommend it strongly. It's a wonderfully human book, very thought-provoking book about a man's journey to find out what happened after a terrorist bomb, a suicide bomb in Tel Aviv in 2001, meeting the family of the bomber, meeting the family of a Palestinian man who donated their loved one's heart to an Israeli who needed a heart transplant, despite the fact that the Palestinian man had been rendered brain dead because he was shot by an Israeli. It's just an amazing story, and it's all true, so I recommend it strongly. I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll go another direction, back with the Richie Allen Show for Thursday after these.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper?
Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete the creative writing course from Creative Imaginings?
Maybe the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. It's Thursday. It's the 30th. Pronounce those THs. Of November. So, tomorrow we're into the madness, really. I always think once you get to December 1st, you're into the madness. It's mad. The lunacy. I was in town the other day on Tuesday because I did a pre-recorded show on Tuesday. And I was in town, I was in the city on Tuesday evening, and it is chaos. Now, when I say I was in town, I'm not on the outskirts of Manchester. I'm pretty central. I'm within 2.5 miles from Piccadilly, so I'm very, very close to the city. That's the one. I'm very close to the city. And it's mayhem. And it distresses me. I'm not going to go into this because I got into it the other night. It distresses me to see the madness of people. Jesus, George Romero was really onto something with Dawn of the Dead, wasn't he? When you see people in city centres wandering around, absolutely oblivious to anything other than the shops they are entering and leaving and entering and leaving. And increasingly, they are shopping with their phone in their hand and earphones or those over-the-head headphones on them. Again, oblivious to the presence of anybody else. And when you stop and look at it, and Market Street in Manchester, of course, is one of the country's most well-known corridors, really. It's a corridor of madness. And at Christmas, what they do is they put all these huts in. Now, Market Street is busy anyway. It's a pedestrianised area of the city, which starts at the top of Piccadilly and goes right down all the way past the Arndale Centre, loads of shops heading down towards Boots on the left and then Marks and Spencer's further on. It's crazy anyway. But they've put all these huts in, and these huts, of course, are selling Christmas bric-a-brac. But what it's done is it's put a huge obstruction. They do this every year. And when you stop and pause, you do actually start to see people as zombies. Brain-dead zombies. That's what you see. And then you feel bad about it. And you say to yourself, you shouldn't be judging people. You shouldn't be saying, you shouldn't be thinking things like that. But that's what people have been reduced to. You only have to look at those videos of Black Friday. That lunacy. That lunacy. You know, the idea that I, or you, and I hope I'm right about you, would, you know, burst into a shop, biting people on the ear and screaming at people and swearing at people to pick up a big screen television. Madness. Utter madness. I've got something a little bit different for you in a minute. Something a little bit amusing. In lieu of George not being on with us for a bit longer, I've had an idea. I've got something amusing to play for you in a second. Just to kind of lighten the old mood ahead of the weekend. Something a little bit different. Before that, though, there's been a few tweets. Hi, Susan. Nice to hear from you, Susan. Richie, music for airports, Susan says. Brian Eno, not needed anymore. Shoppers are hypnotised to near death. Yes. Susan is onto something there. She's onto something very serious. A lot of thought and a lot of scientific study has been put into music in shopping malls, shopping centres, big malls, even outdoors. Because if you're in Manchester, city centre. They've got these speakers on the lamppost. So wherever you go, you're hearing something. It's not always Christmas music either. There's definitely some subliminal thing going on there, you know, maybe force to make you acquiesce, to make you more suggestible maybe. Maybe that's true, and maybe it's a mind control thing, and that's why so many people, I suppose many people have no idea what's going on. You know, they're in there, and they're impulse buying, and they're running around, putting themselves under pressure about Christmas and what I need to have and what I don't have. I talked a lot over the years about national radio and television. I was in the car the other morning. I was driving the future Mrs. Allen to work. And she said to me, and she's incredibly intelligent, she's very, very perceptive. She said, Jesus, the radio's crap, isn't it? Now, that's not the most perceptive thing that anybody ever said in the world. But she said, all of these breakfast shows, they're very formulaic, Richie, she said. I use the word formulaic. She put it differently. She put it more succinctly. But she said, they're all following the same set of rules and they all sound the same. The presenter's voice might sound a bit different, but largely, she said, they all sound the same. And I said to her, look, I've been talking about this for years and she's not been listening. The future Mrs. Allen. Early morning radio, for radio specifically, in the UK, in America, in the Republic of Ireland, radio that we listen to in our cars while making the commute to the job that we don't want to do, that radio is actually a form of methadone. It is methadone. It is banal, meaningless drivel presented by some zany man or woman, or quite often a zany man and woman, talking about nothing of any significance, of any importance, playing very carefully programmed music in order to get the listener to comply, to do what the system wants you to do, which is to get in your car in the freezing fecking cold at 6 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. or God forbid people living miles outside cities leaving at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's to get you to do that and to never question it. To never say, what the fuck am I doing here? Why am I putting myself through this? To go and do this for this company. A job I despise. Working for a company I have no interest in, but I have no choice but to do it. Surrounded by gobshites. So, early morning radio programming. Music that you hear in elevators and in shopping centres. Even early morning television is designed scientifically to get you to acquiesce, to get you into a mental state where you don't say, no, I'm not having it anymore. I am not doing this lunatic thing. I'm not having this lunatic life anymore. I'm not doing it. And I said that to Caroline. I said, that's what it is. And she went, yeah, you're right. It's so formulaic. It's so layered and textured the same way. Different presenters across the different commercial stations, but the same formula. Not because it works. Oh, we'll do that on our breakfast show because it works. We'll get the ratings. No, because it is scientifically designed to hypnotize you into doing what it is that you should be doing. What you should be doing is being productive, paying taxes, dying of stress, having heart attacks, getting illnesses. That's what you should be doing. What you shouldn't be doing is just before you get in the car on a Monday morning going, what the fuck, what's this all about? This is madness. This is not the way to live. Why are we doing this to one another? I'm not going to go in. And not only that, you know, I'm going to talk to other people and I'm going to persuade other people to have a look at this as well. Somebody listening to this might say, that's a crock of shit, Richie. People can't make that decision, even if they wanted to, because they are slaves to the financial teat of the system. They have no choice but to get up and do it. Otherwise, they're going to be out on the street, and there's some truth in that. But the system doesn't think so. The system is still genuinely scared of people waking up to it and saying, what's going on? Hence the banal, mind-numbingly boring drivel that you listen to in your car when you're driving, but strangely comfortable, or strangely comforting, I should say. Isn't it strange? I drove to London the week before last to do the book launch with David down there, and I had the radio on the whole way down, 4 hours in the car, and it occurred to me I was getting sucked into it. Lulled into it. Strangely comforting. So it's not giving you news, information. It's not educating and informing. It is methadone to assist with getting you up off your arse and getting you into the job that you hate, to be with people that you hate while you're struggling to pay a childminder to mind your children, and while your husband or wife or partner is off doing a job that he or she hates for the same reasons. It's a lunatic asylum, isn't it? When you think about it, it is a stark, raving, mad, lunatic asylum. So, we're going to have a bit of fun, because it's all getting rather serious this Thursday. About 10 years ago, I was in Spain, and a friend of mine said to me, Richie, did you ever do prank calls when you were on the radio? And I said, no, not personally, but I did assist presenters make prank phone calls over the years. Sometimes they were funny, sometimes they weren't very funny, but the funny ones were funny. And he said, I have a prank phone call made for you on American radio. Have a listen, Richie. It's marvellous. But it's also very, very, very educational. And I said, what is it? And he said, it's a prank phone call made on an Irishman in America, in Boston or Miami, Florida, somewhere like that. His girlfriend set him up. She got the local radio station to phone him and to wind him up, because they weren't married. So this Irish guy is living with this Irish girl in America. They're not married, but they have a baby. And when they leave the hospital won't put the dad's name on the birth cert because the couple is not married. So they go home and he's trying to figure out a way to get his name on the birth cert, right? So she rings the local radio station. And she says, this is really pissing him off. Get somebody to ring him from officialdom to talk about the birth cert and to wind the absolute bejesus up out of him. This is comedy gold. There's a very slight chance you might have heard this before. I'm thinking you probably haven't. It is comedy gold. And it does say a lot about racism and race relations. This is a guy called Elvis Duran, who's a breakfast radio host on the East Coast of the United States. And he uses an actor to wind up this Irish guy. And it is side-splittingly funny. I've over-egged the pudding. I don't think so. This is funny. Listen to this.
All right, let's get into it. Today's phone tap is very unique. Mm. Today, Dave Brody does an Indian man.
Ooh.
Calling a man who is Irish.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's true. And, man, they go at it. Talk about two cultures clashing.
Uh-oh.
Let's see what happens. Here's what happens with the email. This is how it all became a phone tap. This letter came in saying, Dear Elvis, my boyfriend Barry and I are both from Ireland, and we had our first child a few months ago. Because it's a state law, the baby's parents must be married. We weren't able to get Barry's name on our child's birth certificate. This makes Barry very upset. We've sent numerous requests to change this. We're still waiting to hear back from the state. Why don't you call Barry from the state, tell him that, well, for whatever reason, we can't add his name to the birth certificate until he has to jump through some hoops. We both listen every day, so you may need to disguise your voice. This comes to us from the baby's mama, Geraldine. All right, Geraldine is phone tapping her boyfriend, Barry, about their little kid, and the birth certificate. Dave Brody calling Barry as a state representative. Geraldine will join in on the call later on. Let's listen in to today's very twisted phone tap.
Hello?
Hello, please. I'm calling to speak with Mr. Barry, please.
Yeah, this is him.
My name is Ahmed. Ms. McCann has requested that we put your name on the birth certificate, but we cannot put your name on it.
Why is that?
First of all, we have no way of knowing if you are actually the father.
Yeah, well, I've signed all these papers in the hospital before the baby was discharged, and when the birth check came back, my name wasn't on it.
Yes, that's because you are not married. This is the way it happens here in America. I don't know.
Right. So tell me what I need to do.
There's no possible way that this Miss Geraldine person could not have been with anyone else, please.
Huh?
Is it 100% because we get this all the time and then we do the DNA test and then you're not the father? So I'm asking you now so I can check off the little box. I have a questionnaire I have to ask you.
It's 100%. 100%. Go on to the next question.
All right. Well, don't listen. If you want your name on the birth certificate, we will go at my pace. Okay? I don't know.
Tell me what I need to do to get my name on the birth chart. I don't need this.
At what point do you plan on marrying this woman?
None of your business. Next question.
Excuse me, sir, that is the question on here I have to ask you.
Yeah, I'm after answering it.
Well, then I don't have to put your name on the birth certificate.
You asked me to answer the question. I'm after answering the question. Go on to the next one.
Okay, so you're telling me I should put down you're not going to marry this woman, yes?
None of your business. I said the next question. No, you're after answering the question for you. So go on to the next one.
Smarty McPants, listen to me. If you're going to have more children, I have to know because you're going to...
Hold on a second. I can't understand your broken English. Your English is very bad. Put someone else on the phone.
Listen, my English is better than your English.
Where are you from?
I am from India. Where are you from?
Yeah, India. Put someone else on the phone, will you?
Oh, now you have a problem with India. Where the hell are you from? You're not an American.
Yeah, you're right. You're a proper genius, aren't you? Put someone else on the phone, will you?
You don't sound like somebody who should be anybody's father. I'm trying to help you here.
And where's your father, tell me? Out in the paddy field, is he picking rice or something? Put someone else on the phone.
Now, I'm going to ask you again. Are you planning on having any more children out of wedlock, please?
I might and I might not.
Okay, fine. So I put down that, yes, you're going to have more bastard children. Is that what I'm going to say? Yes.
Huh? Say it again.
You know, I am very good at the world geography, and you sound to me like you're Irish. If you're Catholic...
You're not very good at the English.
I am doing
your English is very broken. You're mixing up your words and everything.
No wonder she doesn't want to marry you, okay? Now I understand.
Yeah, you're probably right. Just go on to the last question, will you, for sake?
Oh, excuse me.
You're the one that said religion. Go on to the last question, you annoying bastard, will you?
Potato eater.
What?
Yes, you with the small schwankies. Everybody knows about the Irish.
You don't know who you're talking to, you stupid. Go on to the last question, will you? Please.
I need to know, since you are not planning on marrying this woman, are you a citizen of the
United... I didn't say that, you stupid.
If you're going to marry her, then when are you planning on marrying her?
Oh, well, yeah. You ask the questions and I'm answering the things. Don't put you... Should you? I tell you what, you write down whatever you want and all the answers. How's that?
That's fine.
Are you finished now, are you?
I'm not going to put your name on the birth certificate.
I don't give a because I'm going to ring back and get someone else.
Listen, Cracker, there's nobody else here but me.
Cracker, huh?
Where's Mick Cracker?
You're very racist, boy.
I ask you again, if you're so Catholic, why are you having the bastard children out of wedlock?
Bastard children, huh?
Yes, it's supposed
to
be...
How many children have you?
I've got four.
How many wives have you?
I've got one.
I tell you, every day you should get down and pray to Abba, or who the f*** you ever pray to, and thank God that you have one wife, for f*** sake.
You are the dumbest man I've ever spoken to.
Is your question finished, is it?
No, I need to know, was this a planned pregnancy?
Jesus Christ almighty.
Look, I'm just going down the questions on the form, don't yell at me.
Is this the last question, is it?
Do you have any kind of hereditary illnesses or diseases in your family?
Yes, I have all the diseases I caught from your whore of a wife.
Okay, so there you go. Put that down. At least I have a wife. I care enough to marry her before I have little immigrant children walking around. I am proud to be an American. Can you say the same?
Yeah, you're proud to be American with a stupid of an accent. I don't hear too many Americans talking like that, do you?
You sound like a leprechaun. That's what you sound like.
Yeah, I tell you, leprechaun.
Listen, you lucky charms-eating bastard.
Here you go again with your good English, isn't it? Get off the phone.
Barry, this is Dave Brody from Elvis Duran and the Morning Show. You've been phone-tapped.
What?
Your not wife thought it would be a good idea to phone-tap you.
Jesus Christ almighty. I'm off the road I'm in the middle of a car park here. Jesus, you're going to get me to... Darling, you're dead. Elvis Duran
phone tap. There you have it.
Absolutely brilliant stuff that. That was recorded about 15 years ago in the United States. Listening back to that, I was mindful of something that we talked about on the program before about racism and about insults. And I certainly wouldn't be condoning anybody speaking to anybody that they don't know or met or encountered by calling them names and referring to their race. But it's very interesting listening to the Irish guy. The more irate he began to become, the more he insulted the Indian guy, who of course was provoking him deliberately, by referring to his race and saying things that people would say are racist. When he referred to the dot on the head, the sacred marking, when he referred to Abba or Allah and all that sort of stuff, the progressives listening to that would say, well, he's obviously racist, the Irish guy. And I would say, well, no, he's not. He's saying that which he believes to be most hurtful, that which he believes will have more of an impact. The more annoyed you are, the more outrageous things that you will actually say. That was comedy gold, that. An old friend of mine sent me that many, many years ago when I was in Spain. It's 25 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to take a very quick break. Back with more in a minute. This is the Thursday edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio as well. 2 minutes, back with more. Don't go anywhere.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper?
Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings
may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now. So read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Welcome back to the program. Caroline had a very lovely, very nice bar in Spain for a number of years. The future Mrs. Allen. And we used to get some footballers in there. Some retired footballers and some modern day footballers. The modern day footballers would generally be the professionals, some of them playing lower down in the leagues. But we used to get a lot of former pros coming in, people like Glenn Hoddle used to come in. Paul Gascoigne came into Caroline's Bar a few times, in fact. Who else? John Gorman used to be the assistant manager of England with Glenn Hoddle. Glenn Hoddle was in himself. Chris Waddle, did I mention him? There's a few. Mark Draper. And guys like Derek Statham, West Brom legend. And Tony Grealish, rest in peace. Tony used to play for the Republic of Ireland and he played for Brighton. And I think Tony played for Leyton Orient as well. If I'm wrong, I'll be embarrassed. But he used to pop in. He used to golf, you see. And he would come in. But one weekend, the Ireland legend Paul McGrath was in. Paul was out playing. I don't know if Paul played golf. I think Paul came for the break. And I think Paul is dry these days. Paul is a recovering alcoholic, Paul McGrath. But I think when we had him in, I think he was being pretty good in terms of he wasn't drinking a lot or very much anyway. And he was in, and he was in for a couple of days. And he was in with his son, Chris. And he got to like Caroline and Caroline's Bar because it's, you know, Caroline was very good with her customers. There was a nice crowd going in there and you could be left alone, really. You know, people might ask for a selfie, but by and large, you'd be left alone. So he used to come in, Paul, and he stayed back one night and we were having a chat and Caroline said to him, did you ever, was it, because you were, you know, in the early 80s, you weren't the first black player. I think Clive Best, correct me if I'm wrong, might have been the first black top flight player. Was he? Jesus, I'm probably wrong. Because I think Arsenal had a goalkeeper many, many years ago. Or an outfield player called George something or other, who was black. But anyway, there weren't too many black players in teams. You had the famous West Brom trio, Batson, Cyril Regis, and of course, Laurie Cunningham, who's not dead, who died some years ago. Rest in peace. But Caroline said to Paul McGrath, did you get much shit? And McGrath said, sometimes you'd come up against forwards, because McGrath was a central defender. He said you would come up against forwards, strikers, and they would try to put you off by saying stuff. You know, they might say, you effing N-word or whatever. Or they might say something else. They might say darky or whatever. He said they'd try and get in your head. And Caroline said, Jesus, that's pretty awful, that. How did you deal with that? And Paul McGrath said, well, I ignored it. Or I gave it back. I was well able to, you know, compete. I mean, he's a wonderful, one of the best centre-halves that's ever played the game, Paul McGrath. And she said, but that's just, you know, it's fair to say that that is pretty blatant racism. And Paul McGrath said this, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but I'm not doing him an injustice. He said, no, it's trying to put me off. It's trying to distract me. It's trying to get me not focused on the game, but it's trying to get me angry. So either one of two things will happen. One, I will lose concentration and I will be likely to make a mistake at the back. Or two, I will lose my temper and throw a punch. That's what it is. And I said to him, so at the end of games then, how often would this have happened? And he said, it wasn't that often. It wouldn't be every single game. But he said, there was always somebody trying to have a go at you. Remy Moses played for United at the time in midfield. Tenacious midfielder. Remy was black, is black. And McGrath said, it would happen every now and then. It wasn't a very regular thing. What about the terraces? People throwing bananas and stuff like that. And he said, well, John Barnes used to get a lot of stick. Probably because Barnes was such an amazing player. He was devastating when he played for Watford. And then when he went on to play for Liverpool. He said maybe fans thought that by getting on his case. But he said, I didn't hear much of it or see much of it from the crowd. So he said, you know, putting me off, he said. Not so much racist, just trying to get in my head. And then he told us a story, and I shared this with David. I was driving up from London with David a couple of weeks back for the Manchester book launch, and I told David the story. When Paul McGrath turned, I can't remember what birthday it was, 24 maybe, 25, he was taken out for his birthday by the captain of Manchester United, Brian Robson, and some other players. And they took him to the Embassy Club, which used to be run by a very famous and a very blue comedian called Bernard Manning, who's dead now. Man City fan, very famous Manconian, Greater Manchester, and, you know, a very, very funny stand-up. Whether you like or liked his material or not, he was terrifically talented comic in terms of his delivery, how he could tell a story. But he was considered for many years racist, of course. You know, it was always said that he was racist. You're racist. And some of the United fans, players even, thought it would be funny to take Paul McGrath to see Bernard Manning. And they would let Bernard Manning know that Paul McGrath was going to be in the audience, and that it was his birthday, and that Bernard Manning could maybe give him a bit of stick. He could take the piss out of him in front of the packed audience. So they went up, they had a few drinks, as the Man United teams of the 1980s did. They had a few drinks, got nice and pissed, and Manning came on to do his act. And some time in the course of the performance, Manning said, "We've got some members of the Manchester United team here tonight." So there were cheers and there were boos. There would have been City fans in the audience, Bolton fans, Blackburn fans, Preston, so on. So he said, "Stand up there, Paul." Of course, Paul McGrath didn't have any idea what was coming next. And he stood up and he gave a wave. "Happy birthday," says Bernard Manning. And then he said something to the effect of, he said, "You're Irish and you're black." He said, "The man upstairs fucked you proper, good and proper, didn't he? Being Irish and being black." And of course, it got a lot of laughs. And I said to, or maybe it was Caroline, I said to him, that's a bit sharp, that's a bit harsh, Dad. What did you think of that? And Paul McGrath said, "I thought it was funny." He said, "I thought it was funny. I laughed out loud." I said, "You weren't offended by it?" He said, "No." He said, "I thought it was very amusing." He said, "I was a bit embarrassed because I'm not used to standing up in a room with everybody laughing and pointing. But," he said, "it was funny." And then he said some complimentary things about me as a player, and I sat down and I enjoyed the rest of the evening. But he said, "I didn't take it as racism." And I said, "Well, there would be black men in this country, black women, who would say, well, that's absolutely racism." And he said, "Well, what they think is for them, and I won't argue with them. But for me," he said, "I didn't find it racist." I also thought that was quite interesting. Paul McGrath, many years ago, not to be name dropping, just an interesting little segue there out of that brilliant phone hack, phone tap, phone prank that we heard there a couple of seconds ago from US radio. Going to take some music when we come back. More chat. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic. A kind of magic. One dream, one soul, one prize, one goal, one golden glance of what should be. It's a kind of magic. One shot.
It's a kind of magic.
9 minutes to the top of the hour. Queen, A Kind of Magic on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Jesus, it's cold out there now. Cold out there now. Francis Welsing, how you doing, Francis? Found the prank call very funny. Francis, if you Google, or if you go to YouTube and put Indian-Irish prank call, it's a prank call by Elvis Duran, as in Robert Duran, Roberto Duran. What's wrong with me? Roberto Duran. So it's Elvis Duran and the Morning Zoo. It's Indian guy, Irish guy prank phone call. It is very, very funny. The actor playing the Indian guy is absolutely brilliant. And you're quite right, Francis. He's very, very quick in a live situation to keep the Irish guy on the line, insult him just enough for it to be funny, but not to lose the call so the Irish guy will hang up. But it's quite hilarious. And I'm always mindful, you know, being a white guy, when I say that the stuff, in my opinion, isn't racist, I'm always mindful that, you know, people of other ethnic backgrounds might say to me, well, you would say that, wouldn't you, Richie? It's just that childish thing you do. If you get very angry with somebody, even if it's somebody of from your own ethnic background, you do tend to say the things that hurt the most. I have done. I'm a very emotional Irish guy, you know, highly strong. Not anymore. Jesus, over the years, I've completely mellowed out. I mean, I'm giving a false impression of myself. If Caroline was here, she'd look at me quizzically and say, no, you're very laid back. I am. But in years gone by, I would be very reactive. And I could get into a very strong argument with anybody, really. There was a time when I could have a row in an empty house. And at times over the years, I have said hurtful things to people that I love, that I never meant. Jesus, I never meant. Never. And afterwards, you feel terrible, and you think, why did I say that? I never meant that. And you realise that you're so annoyed and so emotional in the moment that you're trying to get the upper hand, that you start channeling the worst part of yourself. You actually start to channel that darker side of yourself, and you say things that you don't mean. You know, people say, oh, you must mean them really deep down, otherwise no, you don't mean them. I'm not going to say some of the things I've said over the years in back and forth, you know, arguments. I'm given an impression that these are, you know, terribly violent arguments. They're not. But just bad arguments, you know, where two people are wound up for one reason or another. And you, you know, when you get into it and you say stuff that you shouldn't say, you know. Hi to John Kerr. How you doing, John? Nice to know you're listening. I can tweet it if I can find it again because I've just jumped off YouTube. Hang on a second. I'll tweet it out there. It'll take me a second to tweet it out. I shall tweet it out right now, that clip to that audio, if you want to share it with other people. So there it is. It's tweeted out there right now on the Richie Allen Twitter page. I've tweeted a link out to the YouTube video. Elvis Duran phone in, and Dave Brody is the name of the actor, I think, who played the Indian guy, who absolutely wound the absolute bejesus out of the Irish guy whose name was, if this is the Krypton Factor, we'd be in trouble now. Barry, that's right. Barry. There you go. The Krypton Factor, Richie, what's that? It was a game show in the 1980s on ITV presented by Gordon Burns. And in one of the tests, you had to do an observation test. You had to watch and listen to a clip of something. And then you would be asked questions on it later on. Right, I'm more or less out of here. for today. Anyway, I will be back with you, of course, on Sunday morning. Sunday morning. I'll be with you at 11 a.m. UK time. That's 11 a.m. UK time on Sunday morning for Sunday View, where I'll be looking at the Sunday newspapers and the front pages of the broadsheets and the tabloids, and we'll be talking about what's in the Sunday newspapers and more besides, all of that on Sunday at 11. In the meantime, look after yourselves and one another. Wrap up. It's freezing in the UK, and our weather warnings tonight for snow and ice. Give some thought tonight to people who are sleeping on the streets. And again, I mean that. It's a terrible thing. Where you can help, do. Because it must be a dreadful thing. Leaving you and loving you. I will speak with you on Sunday at 11. Stay in touch with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and Tune In Radio. I'm going to leave you with some The Cult. And this is She Sells Sanctuary. Sanctuary even, on your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Thanks to George Webb for coming on. Thanks to Simon for all the YouTube work. Cheers, Simon. Have a good weekend. See you Sunday. Bye for now. Look after yourselves and one another. Take it easy.